Today's shiur is Masechta Yevamos Daf Yud Gimel. We're going to begin on Daf Yud Beis on the base, 17 lines from the bottom. In the previous shiur, we had learned the issue of machlokes between Ramei and the Chachamim about a ketana, about a young girl, how she could have relations with her husband, if she's allowed to use contraceptives. And Ramei said that she may, and the Chacham said she may not. But what we clearly see from that Gemara is that a young girl, a ketana, is able to get pregnant. One question is, what will the pregnancy cause? But she certainly could get pregnant. Now let's go back to something we learned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah taught us that if a wife who was an erva to the Yavam did miyun in her husband prior to the husband dying, our old example, Reuven's daughter is married to Shimon, and Reuven's daughter is a ketana, and she does miyun to Shimon before Shimon passed away. The halacha is that Shimon's other wife would be required to have yibum or chalitza from Reuven after Shimon died. So the Mishnah made a comment. The Mishnah said that the miyun is not possible by one's mother-in-law, mother-in-law's mother, or father-in-law's mother. And we explained, because these people, by definition, cannot be ketanim. Miyun is only allowed to be done by ketana. And these people, if they already have a daughter, if a mother-in-law already has a married daughter, how is it possible that miyun is doable? That's how we learned the Mishnah. So the Gemara's question now is very obvious. If we just proved, based on yesterday's Gemara, that a woman who's a ketana can have children, why does the Mishnah make a statement, a blanket statement, that it's impossible for one's mother-in-law to do miyun? It is possible for mother-in-law to do miyun. As Rashi gives a scenario, a woman had a baby while she was a ketana. One's mother-in-law had a baby when she was a ketana. This ketana goes and marries a man. Okay? That's fine. Then this mother-in-law, she's still a ketana, divorces, or her first husband dies, marries, so let's just give names to it, a woman who had a baby. This baby, midaraisa, a baby could get married. The father marries her off, married Reuven. Now this mother-in-law of Reuven's divorces her husband and marries Shimon, Reuven's brother. She's still a ketana. And here we have a case where you could, and since she's still a ketana, she could do miyun, and she's a mother-in-law. So why is our Mishnah saying that it's impossible for a mother-in-law to do miyun? We just gave a scenario where a mother-in-law could be a candidate for miyun. Ask the Gemara. Midakamra, since we learned in the previous Gemara, Shemet Abra v'Shemet Thomas, that a woman could have a child when she's a ketana, Mechlaldi ke ketana de Me'abra v'Leimesa. There's a concern she may not survive, but she may survive. In Cain, if that's the case, as we just described, we could construct a scenario where someone's mother-in-law could still do miyun. Yet, in our Mishnah we learned, these three ervis that were identified in our Mishnah, we said it can never be a situation. So, if we learned that a ketana could have children, why is the Mishnah making a blanket statement that one's mother-in-law can never do miyun? Answers the Gemara. We have to reword what we learned yesterday. It's not that they may get, that they get pregnant, they may survive and may not survive. Rather, Eimah Shemetis Abba Thomas, they certainly will not survive a pregnancy. Dom Rabbi Bar Levoy, as Rabbi Levoy described it, Gvo Yeshla, every woman has the following statuses. Kaidim hazmanazeh, before she's 11 years old, even if she has relations with her husband, einam abra kol ikar. It's impossible for her to get pregnant. Toich hazmanazeh, during this period, he mesa, she can't survive, rubber mesa, neither can her child. Lach hazmanazeh, after 12 years old, he chaya, she could survive, rubber chay. So now we have an answer to our question. We said that maybe the woman will have a baby, and the baby will And that's why we have a situation that one she becomes a mother-in-law one, and she's a Tana still two, she can't, because if she's going to have a baby before she's 12 years old, she won't survive, and certainly the child won't either. So we're back to where we started. We never can have a situation of one's mother-in-law who's a Ketana and therefore be a candidate for Miyan. Ask the Gemara, is that true? That the Gemara is saying that no woman can have a child before she's 12 years old, before she's a Gedoyla? V'tanu Rabbi Barlevoi, Yat yachalayim v'chamoysa v'em chamoysa, Rabbi Barshmul, Yat yachalayim v'chamoysa v'em chamoysa v'em chamof, we can never find a situation that they're in idleness or that they could do miyun. Because we see already that they have children. So the Mefarshim explained the Gemara's question beautifully. If Rabbi Balavoy is correct that every woman can only have a child after she's a gedola, so why do they use the terminology in this price of shekvar yoldu? They should write shekvar godlu. Since they're already gedolim, that's why miyun is impossible. Shekvar Yoldu seems to indicate that yes, they are still ketanim, but the fact that they have children prevents them from being an idleness, obviously, and also prevents them from being to dumiyun. Why? So that clearly, number one, all the Rishonim explained, is contradiction to what Rabbi Arlevoy says, because according to Rabbi Arlevoy, the Brisa should have said Shekvar Gadlu, they could only have children after the Gedolim. But then the Rishonim make a point. Why do we have to ask a question from the Braisa, from the Braisa to Rabbi Alvoy? The Braisa itself is a difficult Braisa. The Braisa seems to say that a woman who's not a Gedoyla could already have children. So if that's true, that a woman who's not a Gedoyla could already have children, so why is our Mishnah say that a mother-in-law can never do Miyun? If she's a Ketana, she could still do Miyun. So some Rishonim say that that's included in the question that the Gemara is asking. Others say that if we only had the Braisa, that wouldn't be a difficulty in our Mishnah. Because what we would say is that even though this woman could have children when she's a Ketana, Chazal made a gzeira that every woman, once she has children, she's no longer a candidate for Miyun. And that's why the Braisa is understandable. But Rabbi Balavoy didn't say that. Rabbi Balavoy says that if she's a Gedoyla, if she's a Ketana, she would be a candidate for Miyun. What's her problem? Because Rabbi Alvoy says it's impossible for her to have children. This Braisa clearly indicates that a Ketana can have children. Says the Gemara, Elul Oymul Shemetis Aviv Shemet Thomas. We go back to the way we learned yesterday. The concern is that she may get pregnant, and she may survive, and she may not survive. But she may survive, and a child might survive. If that's the case, we go back to our original Kashta we began the Shir with, El Kashahach. We have a kasha, if so, why does the Mishnah make a blanket statement that a woman who's a mother-in-law, given that she had children, has to be a gdoila and is no longer a candidate for miyun? It's not true. We devised a scenario where she could be a ketana and be a mother-in-law, and she should be a candidate for miyun. Answers the Gemara, Amra Safra, Bottom Hareim Kisimonim. As soon as she has children, the halacha considers her a gdoila. We know that what makes a girl a gedola when she's 12 years old and shows certain physical signs, primarily shtei sarois by samakim, Chazal tell us that if she has children, she has the din of a gedola. And there's a very interesting machlokes between Rabbi Aaron Kotler and Rabbi Reuven Grzovsky in understanding this Gemara. We know, as we said a moment ago, that a woman being 12 years old and having simonim is a gedola. There's a shaila, what does that mean? Does that mean that these characteristics trigger that she becomes a gedola? Or a gedola is a gedola. An adult is an adult. Just how do I know? The way we can know is by seeing if she has these simonim. Rabbi Aaron Kotler learns that it's not the simonim that trigger that she becomes a gedola. He learns that the woman is a gedola. Just if I see a woman, how do I know if she's a gedola? So if I see certain simonim, that's a proof to me that she's a gedola. Says Rabbi Aaron Kotler, that's Pshat in our Gemara. Just like age and Saris are a simon, so too are bonim a sign that she's a gedola. Reuven Grzovsky learns the Gemara differently. He says that it's the age and the Saris that trigger a woman to become a gedola.
But what Rav Safra is teaching us, says Reb Reuven, it is another way to trigger it. Bonim. If a woman has children, that triggers that she's considered a gadol. Gdoila. This Tamri, another version of Rav Safra's Teretz, is Bonim Adifu Misimonim. Bonim are even better than Simonim. Ask the Gemara, L'mayin Nafkamina, what's the difference if they're equal or better? The bottom line is, she's a gdoila. Answers the Gemara, Dafil Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda says in Masechta Nida, Dama Achi Yir B'Shachar, that as we said a moment ago, a simon of maturity by a girl is the Cyrus. So Yehuda says, I'm a Masechta Nida, it's not just two hairs. It has to have a lot of hair, but Isamakam. Says the Gemara, what Rav Safra means to say here is, even a Yehuda that requires a lot of hair will agree here that Bonim have certainly the status of Simonim. Maide, he'll agree that this is an adequate simon of godless. Rav Zvid has a different approach. He says, Ein bonim b'loy simonim. As the Rishonim explained, Rav Zvid is speaking about a girl who's between 11 and 12. And Rav Zvid says that you could have a girl that's between 11 and 12. If she has simonim, then she's a gdoila. And Rav Zvid is saying this, the fact that she had a baby is a proof that she had the simonim. Ask the Gemara, if what we really are looking for are the simonim, and we're just saying that the child is a proof that the simonim are there, so why do we have to look at the child? Let's look for the simonim, for Nivdaik. Why don't we look for the simonim? Answers the Gemara, Chashina Shemanashru. We can't look for the simonim, because maybe there was hair and it fell out. Ask the Gemara, Ha Nich Lamanda Mechashin. This Gemara Masechta Nida that has a machloikis. Do we have to be concerned if there was hair and it fell out? So according to the Mandama, that's a legitimate concern. That's why doing the examination is not an approach. El Mandama ein chayshin, according to the Mandama Masechta Nida that says, if we do an examination and there are no saros there, we don't have to be concerned that they were there and fell out. So why just not do an examination? Why are we looking about at the children? Michael Amemer answers the Gemara, Afil Mandama ein chayshin, even according to Manda Omer, that normally we don't have to be concerned that there was Saris there and fell out. Here, Mishum Tsar Leda, this woman went through the childbirth. Even that Manda Omer, that's normally not concerned that hair falls out, will agree that this is a reason that hair should fall out and Chashishin. So Taisus asks an obvious question. Fine. Childbirth could cause these changes, and that the Saris might have fallen out. And everybody could agree that that happens during childbirth. But why don't we examine her before she has the baby? Why don't we examine her while she's in the time of pregnancy? So Taisus answers that that's what the Gemara means. The Gemara doesn't mean specifically that childbirth causes the Saris to fall out. The pregnancy causes the hairs to fall out, and therefore she's not a candidate for examination. The Mashal says a simple teretz. The Mashal says, when do we begin getting concerned about her? When she becomes a mother-in-law. When does she become a mother-in-law? She can't become a mother-in-law until she had a baby. So if so, there's no point in examining her before, because she wasn't a mother-in-law. We're only going to examine her after the baby is born. And after the baby is born, she went through childbirth, which causes the Saris to fall out. And that's why Rav Zvid says, the Gemara assumes that if she had a baby, there was simonim, and they just fell out, and she has the status of a gdoila, and therefore she's not a candidate for miyun, which is exactly what the Mishnah says, that one's mother-in-law could never do miyun. But that is a fundamental shaila based on this Gemara that the Rishonim discussed. If Rav Zvid told us that you could have a girl who's between 11 and 12, if she has simonim, the halacha considers her as a gdoila, so why do we always treat a girl as bas mitzvah only at 12? Why are we not concerned that the girl, when she's 11, already has simonim, and based on Rav Zvid, she's a gdoila? So Rishonim say that it's a miyuta de miyuta. Very few girls have simonim at such a young age, and we don't have to be concerned that that's the situation. Only here, where something pointing, the fact that she got pregnant, that's all we have to be concerned. So Rishonim ask a gvaldik kasha. We can rely on Roiv. Roiv tells us most girls don't have simonim in between 11 and 12, and we don't have to assume that they're gedolim. But the halach is in a situation where we don't have to rely on Roiv. We don't rely on Roiv. That's called a davar sheyesh lematirim. So they ask the following question. Let's say we'll have a girl that's between 11 and 12 years old, and she makes a neder. So if she's a gedoila, her neder is a good neder. If she's a ketana, it's meaningless. So we're saying that we'll treat her nether like she's a ketana. We follow Roiv. Why should we follow Roiv? Let us say that the nether is a good nether, and if she wants to get out of the nether, she should have to go to Rav to null it. Hataras Nadarim. It's a Davash Yesh Lematirim. So the Rishonim say a very bechidish, that even though we don't rely on Roiv by a Davash Yesh Lematirim, there are certain Roivs where it's so, where the Roiv is a strong Roiv. They say here it's a miyuta the miyuta, very few girls become gedolim at this age. There we can rely on Roiv even by Dovah Shesh Lematirim. And that's why she would not even have to have a nether annulled. It's considered meaningless. Then there's another shaila in the Rishonim. If you have a girl, the girl of our Gemara, who's between 11 and 12, and brought simonim, or had the babies, which is equivalent to simonim, and we're treating her a gedolah, is that only l'chumra, or only also l'kula? We're certainly treating her l'chumra, that we're saying that she can't be a candidate for miyun. We also treated Lakula, let's say she does something that requires das, are we considering a full-fledged gedolah, Lakula Lachumra, only Lachumra, Machlekes Rishonim. So we learned in the Mishnah, Kate said, Paitris Sarasayim, how do we know that we learned that if an erva falls to a Yavam, again back to our example, Reuven's daughter married his brother Shimon, and Shimon had another wife, so when Shimon, Rachman al-Islam, dies without children, so since Reuven's daughter is not a candidate for Yibum, she also patters, she also exempts her co-wife, Atzara, Menani Mili, from where do we know this? Amar Yehuda Damakra, Litzrar. The Torah uses the word Litzrar, Hatayra Ripsa Tzara's Harbe. The Torah says that Atzara and Atzara are always exempt from Yibum. Now there's a very fundamental Machlaikus Rashi and Taisus, which we'll speak about more in a moment, in understanding this Gemara. Rashi says that this pasuk is needed to teach us that even a tzara, tzara's erva, is exempt from yibum. Taisa says, a tzara's erva we don't need a pasuk for. It's only a tzara's tzara that we need this pasuk for. Continues the Gemara, Ravashi says, svarihi. It's a svara why we could say that tzara's erva is exempt from the requirement to have yibum chalitza. Tzara mai tam asira. Because why is a tzara exempt? The makam erva kaima. Tzara nami bakam erva kaima. The tzara has the halacha like an erva. So Rabbi Chanan offers two ways of explaining this Gemara. One way of explaining the Gemara is, the tzara is really an eishes ach, as is every brother's wife, who's an erva. Just the Torah said that if there's a mitzvah of yibum, that iser goes away. But if one co-wife is an erva, the Torah is telling us, Rav Zvit says, Rav Ashi says Rabbi Chanan, that she has a din of Eishes Ach, and Eishes Ach is an Erva. That's one way of explaining it. Another way of explaining, going back to our example, says Rabbi Chanan, if one is a co-wife of a daughter, so the Torah, the Svara tells us that she has the same status as the daughter. So the reason that Svara is an exempt is not because she's an Eishes Ach. She's exempt because she's a Bas. The Torah treats her, since she's the co-wife of a bas, she has the din of a bas. Say to Mefarshim, based on these two explanations of the Gemara, that's the machlokes of Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says that she has the din of an eishes ach. No, I'm sorry. Rashi says she has the din of a bas. That's a big chiddush to call her a bas. So I had to go and say that she's so much considered a bas that she should exempt tzara. Like the Mishnah said, even if 100, that's a chiddush. I need a pasuk. But for the first marriage, I don't need it. Taisus, on the other hand, says that she's an Eishes Ach. Once we revert to calling her an Eishes Ach, so she's a regular Erva. That's not a Chiddush. So there's no difference between the first marriage, between Tzara and Tzara's Tzara. To exempt her, it's all the same, and one Pasuk is used for both. So we learned Ketzer and Mesahein. So we learned in the Mishnah as follows. Back to our example. Reuven's daughter was married to Shimon. And Shimon had another wife. And then Shimon divorced his wife. And then Shimon divorced Reuven's daughter. And then he dies. So at the moment, at that critical moment of death, when Shimon died, Reuven's daughter was not married to Shimon. So Shimon's widow and Reuven have Zika. They have to do Yibum Chalitza. Now, our Mishnah, and that's the halacha as we'll learn in the Maskana, doesn't differentiate if Reuven's daughter and this other wife of Shimon were ever co-wives or not. It makes no difference when Shimon divorced Reuven's daughter, whether he divorced her before he married his other wife or divorced her after he married his other wife. The point being, as long as she was not his wife, when he died, when Shimon died, Shimon's leftover widow is a candidate for Yibam Chalitza. That's what the Gemara says. Afil Kanes of Saif Kirish. Even if there was a moment that these two women were co-wives, it doesn't bother us. Reminu, Mishnah says, we're going to learn it in Mishnah Sam, Gimel Achim, Shnayim Hem Nesum Beis Achayis, Vechid Nosi Nachris. We have three brothers, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven and Shimon are married to two sisters, Rachel and Leah. And Levi is married, Vechid Nosi Nachris. And Levi is married to Chana, totally not related. Girish Echad Bal Achayis Ishtai. Reuven divorces his wife, Rachel. Umeis Hanosi Nachris. And then Levi passes away. V'kantza Megerish. And then Reuven takes Levi's widow into Yibam. Umeis. And then Reuven dies. Zu Sha'amru. This is the case, says the Mishnah, we're going to learn later in the Masechta. Shemesu Onizgarshu. That since Reuven divorced his wife, the other wife, that means Reuven's other wife, which was originally Levi's widow, Tzersei Materis. So she is now candidate for Yibam Uchalitza to Shimon. But what is this Mishnah teaching us? Tama de Girish v'achakach kines. What happened here was that Chana and Reuven's original wife were never married to Reuven simultaneously. Because the Mishnah spoke about a case where Reuven divorced his wife before he did Yibam on Levi's widow. Avil, what would have been? Doesn't this Mishnah teach us that let's say Kines v'achakach girish, if Reuven would have been married to Chana and Rachel at the same time, even though he divorced Rachel before he died, since he was married to Chana and Rachel, and while he was married to these two women, Shimon cannot do Yibam to them, because Shimon's married to Leah, Rachel's sister. Therefore, even though at the critical moment of death, Reuven wasn't married to Rachel, makes no difference, because they became Tzara Sarva. Not like we explained. Tama, again into the Gemara. The Girish v'achakach kines. Rachel and Chana were never co-wives. Av kines v'achakach girish. Had they been co-wives, loy, even though at the moment of Reuven's death they weren't. Which is different than what we learned in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says all we look at is what's the status at death. Amrav, you're right. Tavra, Misha Shanazu, Loy Shanazu. The two Mishnayis are disagreeing. Hi Tana Sover, the Tana of our Mishnah learns, Misma Pelis, as we've been learning, the critical moment is the moment of death. For Hi Tana Sover, Nisuan Arishonim Apilim. The Tana of the other Mishnah holds that we don't look at the moment of death, we look at the whole marriage leads up to Yibam, because Yibam is based on a marriage. So if these two women were tzaros to each other at any point, and this woman, Chana, got the status of a tzaros erva, it makes no difference that at the time of death, she wasn't a Tzara Sarva. And this is a difficult Gemara. We're going to learn the Gemara Mitzvah Shem. There are fundamental questions. If that's the case, the Gemara teaches us that let's say one had a child. The man had a child. And the child died before he did. So his wife is a candidate for Yibam. But if we say we look at the entire history of the marriage, so at one point his wife wasn't a candidate for Yibam. So why, according to this Gemara, is she a candidate for Yibam? Another question is, the Mishnah says clearly, Achois Ishtoi. Let's say someone was married, there were two brothers married to two sisters. Reuven and Shimon, like our case, were married to Rachel and Leah, and Reuven had another wife. And the halacha is that if Reuven's wife dies, the Reuven's wife who's a sister, Reuven's wife Rachel dies before Reuven, then when Reuven dies, his other wife that he may have is a candidate for Yibam. At one point she wasn't, she was a Tzara Sarva. These are questions that we're going to have to discuss when we learn the sugya later. Rava, so right now the way the Gemara is explaining, we have a fundamental machlokes, how does it work? Does it work at the moment of death, or does it work a lead up from the marriage? And since during the marriage they were Tzaras, it remains forever. The Paiskim used this Gemara for a very interesting shaila. There was a city that accepted a specific individual as a shaykhet. But they, maybe because of past experience, made a condition with him that his children don't have precedence
to get his position after he dies. And then, of course, after years at the position, he wanted to bring his son into the position. And the members of the community said, you can't. We made a condition. So the Rishayim want to say, again, a son that under normal circumstances has precedence to be a memala makom of his father, when does it happen? Does it happen at the moment of death, Misa? Or does it happen during the person's position? If it happens at the moment of death, so the condition that he agreed to when he first accepted the position is meaningless. Because that's not the time that the son's preference comes into play. If on the other hand we learn the suin, that just like by even it's the marriage that's the preparation for that, here too, the whole time that he had this position was a lead up to his moment of death, and then the condition that he entered to would be a halachically accepted condition. Rav Amar, Lo'ilam Chatanahu. There is no machlokes between our Mishnah and the Mishnah we're going to learn later in the Masechta. That Mishnah clearly seems to indicate that if there were tzaras at any point in life, this woman gets the status of a tzaras erva. Says the Gemara, Zuvan tzarech lo'im zuktani. And the way the Mefarshim explained this is beautifully. Our Mishnah, as we said, is very clear that the only thing we look at is the moment of death. Yes, the Mishnah later in the Masechta is ambiguous. The Mishnah later in the Masechta did not feel the need to be clear in telling us it makes no difference what was during the life. We look at the moment of death. Given that the first Mishnah of our Masechta already taught us this thing so carefully and so clearly, the other Mishnais in the Masechta will not be careful to make sure that we shouldn't make this error, because we already know that the halach is that the only thing we look at is the moment of death. We learned further in the Mishnah, the Kol Shayichal Laman, that, again, our example, Reuven's daughter is married to Shimon, and Shimon has another wife, but as we learned yesterday, Reuven's daughter is still a Ketana, and she's Yisoyim B'chaya Av, she could do Miyun. So the Mishnah says that even though she could do Miyun, that will not be allow that she for sure, but even her co-wife, should be a candidate for Yibam Mochalitza to his brother Shimon. Says the Gemara, why not? But Taman Hashtav, it's a Shabin. Why doesn't Reuven's daughter do Miyun? That will retroactively annul her marriage to Shimon, and therefore a co-wife should be a candidate for Yibam. Lem Mesaila L'Rabosha, should our Mishnah not be a proof to what Rabosha said? The Omer Rabosha, Mamenis L'Mamora, a Yavoma, Kedumiyin Tamaimer, as we spoke about yesterday, that a Yavim does do a Kedusha, the Rabbanon, and a Yavoma, that Mian could work for. The Ein Mamenis L'Zikosoi, after the husband dies, it's too late for her to retroactively annul that marriage. Says the Mara Loi, Tsar Saravashani. Halachically, she can do Miyun. Just here is another reason why we don't allow her tzara to have chalitza. We learned this Gemara yesterday. The Tani Rami by Yecheskel, Miyun Ababal. Let's say there's a man, this is the way we explained it yesterday. Let's say Reuven was married to a woman who was a ketana, and his wife does Miyun in him, Mataris Loviv. She's allowed to marry his father. Even though he had relations with this woman, she's only a mefutas benoi, and a person is allowed to marry a person whose son had relations. She was never a daughter-in-law, because Mian retroactively annulled the marriage. However, Mian of Yavim, let's say Mian was only done after the husband died, Asura L'Aviv. Why? As we explained yesterday, Alma Mishas Nefila Nirzka Kalasa. At the moment of death, Shimon was married to Reuven's daughter. Or at the moment of death, without Yibam, she looked like a daughter-in-law. Once it looked like that at the moment of death, even if Mian is done afterwards, it's too late. Hachinami, Mishas Nefila, Neris Tzaras Pita, since when Shimon died, he was married to Reuven's daughter, even though Reuven's daughter will be able to do Miyun, and it will retroactively annul the marriage she had with Shimon. But we look, like we said a moment ago, at the moment of death. And at the moment of death, what did this situation look like? That Reuven's daughter has Zika to him. And our Mishnah said that if an Erva has Zika, she's not eligible for Yibam or Chalitza, nor her co-wife. That's why Chazal said that in this circumstance, even if she does do Miyun, and even if halachically the Miyun is valid, it will be powerful enough that her Tzara should not be allowed to do Yibam, only Chalitza. Continues the Mishnah. Sheish Arayis Chamuris Me'ela.
Our Mishnah, the first Mishnah, the Masechta, identified 15 arayas that could be married to one's paternal brother. But now, these 15 women, these six women we're going to identify now, can never be married to one's paternal brother. And since they can never be married to one paternal brother, they only can be married to other people. So the same with Taurus. As we've explained, but it's worth repeating. If, this is the simple pshat, if somebody's brother is married to if my brother's married to, if someone's brother's married to an erva, and he has another wife, so since the erva is exempt from Yibam, it also exempts a co-wife. But let's say there would be a man who's married, let's say we have two people in the world, Reuven and Chaim, not brothers. And Chaim is married to Reuven's daughter and to another woman. And Chaim dies. There's no mitzvah of Yibam. Chaim and Reuven aren't related. Would Reuven be allowed to marry his daughter's co-wife? Absolutely. That's what the Mishnah is teaching us. That these women can never be married to someone's brother. They only can be married to other people. So there's no mitzvah of Yibam ever. And that's why they for sure can't have relations with their relative. But the co-wives may be married. Imai, who are they? Imai. And as we explained, it's not his father's wife. But let's say Reuven's mother, that means somebody's father had relations with a woman, and Reuven was born, that woman is usher to any of Reuven's paternal brothers. Eshesav is just the opposite. A woman who is married to someone's father, even if they're not the children of that woman. These are all people that their paternal brothers can never be married to. Now the Mishnah teaches us a very interesting machlokes. We've been learning from the beginning of the Masechta that Erva is exempt from Yibam as is her Tzara. Says Beis Shammai, no. The Erva is exempt, but it doesn't exempt the Tzara. And Beis Hillel say it exempts her, and as we've been learning, her Tzara. Says the Mishnah, Chaltzu. So let's say, back to our example, Reuven's daughter, Reuven and Shimon brothers. Reuven's daughter is married to Shimon with a co-wife. Now Shimon dies. So according to Beis Shammai, Reuven's daughter's co-wife is a candidate for Yibam. Because there's no, or Chalitza. Because there's no din of Tzara Serva according to Beis Shammai. So if she receives Chalitza, she's considered a Chalutza. As we have learned in the previous year, a Chalutza is not a married kohen. So this woman would not be allowed to marry Kain, because she's a full-fledged chalutza. Chaltzu, Beshamim Paisman Kahuna. But according to Beis Hillel, this woman is exempt from requiring Yibam Chalitza, because she's a Tzaris Erva. So even if she went through the process of Chalitza, it's a meaningless thing, and therefore, Machshirim. On the other hand, Nisyabu, this co-wife, according to Beis Shammai, is a full-fledged candidate for Yibam. And therefore, if she has Yibam, it's perfectly fine. On the other hand, Beis Hillel Paislam. Beis Hillel say she's not a candidate for Yibam. Because according to Beis Hillel, she's a Tzaris Erva. She's an Eishes Ach. And therefore she's not allowed to have Yibam. If she has Yibam, she's living with her brother-in-law. And she did an Avera that there's a Chiv Karas for. Interesting, Machlokes Rashi in Taisus. Rashi says that even though she did such an Avera, if she were the daughter of a Kayin, she would still be allowed to eat Truma. Taisus disagrees. Taisus said that because she entered into such a relationship, it disqualifies her, even if she's single and the daughter of a Kayan, that she should never be allowed to eat Truma again. And Taisus says the Rashi retracted ultimately and agreed to him. Even though we have now a situation that Beis Shammai says that she may have Yibam or Chalitza Beis Hillel, not Eilu Paisu Eilu Machshirim. So now we have real situations, which the Gemara will discuss more at length tomorrow, where we could have illegal relationships. We could even end up with mamzerim. Still, nimla beishamai melis nashim beisilul v'le beisilum beishamai. They're still intermarried. Similarly, kol taharas v'tamei yishoy elam etarim v'elam etamim. There were different things that these people held with beishamai held was tar, beisil was tamei. Le'nimlu oisim taharas v'gabe elu. They still used each other's kalim. Why? As we were learning the Gemara in Mitzvah Shem, because since everyone was aware, Beis Shammai was aware of Beis Hillel's position, Beis Hillel was aware of Beis Shammai's position, they notified each other what the basis of a marriage was, And in other words, Beis Shammai had a girl in his family that he knew that according to Beis Hillel, she wasn't supposed to get married, even though they hold she was. Or Beis Shammai had a keli that they held was tahor, and Beis Hillel held was tamei. They were notified, Beis Hillel. And this is actually the halacha. The halacha is that let's say I come to someone's home, and I have certain chumras in what I eat, and he doesn't. So am I allowed to eat there? So the Arzurua discusses this, and the Benzin discusses it, and the Arzurua clearly says that if my host is a trustworthy individual, and he's aware of my chumras, I'm allowed to eat there, because I could assume that if there was a problem with what I was eating, he would notify me, as Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel notified each other. But I saw a very interesting psak from the Sharm Tzion of Halacha. Even though this is the halacha like the Azrua, even though the Binyan Tzion questions it, that the halacha is like the Azrua, he says, this is only when the food that's given to me, I have no way of knowing the status of this food without my host telling it to me. So let's say I'm Makban Chov Yisrael. And he gives me a dish of ice cream. So when I see a dish of ice cream, I have no way of knowing that it's Chov Yisrael. So if my host knows that I'm Makban Chov Yisrael, and he's a trustworthy individual, I could eat, because I could assume that if it's not Chol Yisrael, even though he doesn't eat Chol Yisrael, he'll notify me. But let's say he puts the package of the ice cream on the table. So I could see the package without him telling me anything. There, I can't assume that the fact that my host did or didn't tell me anything means anything, because he could easily be assuming, says the Sharm Tzion Balakha, that I could look at the package, I don't need him to tell me anything. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Shimon Pazi, my time at the Beis Shammai. Why did Beis Shammai hold that a tzaris erva is not exempt from yibum? The ksiv, the pasuk says, Lesia eishes ameis achutzel izor. The woman should not be chutzah. Chutzah, if we say that there's one woman who's outside, dik michlal, dik a pnimis, that there's two wives. The one wife is a pnimis, I mean she's a relative, and one wife is a chutzah, it's not a relative. Vam Rachman, and the Torah is telling us that the woman who's not a relative to the Yavim, Lesia, may not marry another man. Rather, she is required to have Yibam b'chalitza. What will Beis Hillel do with this pasuk? Beis Hillel Mabai Lech Rav Yehuda Merav. They use this pasuk for Rav Yehuda Merav teaches us. Dom Rav Yehuda Merav, Menayin Sh'en Kedushin Taisin B'Yavama. How do we know that a Yavama, even though she's only a Chayiv Elavin, as we're going to learn many times in these Masechtas that we're going to be learning now, a Chayiv Elavin, you're not supposed to marry a woman who's also to be with a Lav. But the Halacha is Kedushin is Taifis. A Yavama is an exception to the rule. A Yavama, Kedushin are not Taifis. Shenema, even though she's only a Chayiv Lavin. That means, let's say, simple case. Reuven and Shimon are brothers. And Shimon's married to a woman, not related to Reuven. And he dies, and he leaves over a widow. How do we know that if this widow, who's supposed to, only has an Issa Lav to marry someone else, if she gets married to someone else, the Kedushin is not effective? Shenema, Loisiyah Eishas Amayis Hachutzala Zor. Loisiyah Bahavayla Zor. Until she goes through either Yibam or Chalitza, she can't get married to anyone else. And there's a very interesting Shaila. I sort of asked from the Raisa discusses this. What is this Pasuk telling us? Is this Pasuk telling us that until she goes through the process of Yibam or Chalitza, we consider her still like she's married to her original husband? She's an Eshesish. And that's why she's not qualified to get married to anyone else? Or is the pasuk telling us a new din? That really, if we follow Hilchis, Erva, she's allowed to get married. Because she's only Issalav. There's a new din that the Torah told us, that even though she's only Chayv Lav, and we don't let her get married, and no Kedushin could be effective with her. What's the Nafkamina between the two approaches? The Nafkamina is as follows. If it's a din in Hilchis Arayis, so Hilchis Arayis, Taloch is Yorg Val Yavar, Hilchis Arayis you need two Adam for. If it's a separate new din that the Torah introduced, all the special requirements that we have for Hilchos Arayis would not apply here. Beis Shammai, according to Beis Shammai, why doesn't he say that the pasuk is coming to teach me this din? It says the Mamiksiv lichutz. The pasuk doesn't say Lesi Ish Meis lichutz. Chutzik Siv. So it doesn't have any, if the Pyre was trying to teach us that she's not going to marry anyone else, it should have said l'chutz, not chutzah. Or Beis Hillel says, kim d'ksiv chutzah, if the Torah uses the word chutzah, command d'ksiv l'chutz dami. It's equivalent as if the Torah would have used the word l'chutz. The Tanya of Nechemya Oimer, kol teiv v'shetzrich lam b'tchilosai. We have many situations where the Torah, where a word should have the word lam before it, hit a loya kosav hei b'saifa. Instead of putting the lam at the beginning of the word, puts the hay at the end of the word. Gemara gives a number of examples. The Tana Bei Rishmok, you're going Eilim Eleima. The Pasuk says that he went to Eilim. It doesn't say Eilim, it says Eilima. Similarly, Machnaim, it says Machnaima. Mitzrayim, Mitzrayima. Devosayima, Yerushalayim, Midbara. So so the fact that Beis Shammai is arguing that the Pasuk should have said L'chutz, he doesn't consider that a cogent, that is not considered a cogent argument. I saw two very nice Pshatim. The Beis Yisrael explained, why did the Torah do it? Why, instead of putting the lamed at the beginning of the word, does the Torah put the hay at the end of the word? From here we learn, says the Beis Yisrael, he said it from the Vurka Rebbe, the power of speech. A person not supposed to speak too much. So if he could avoid saying a letter, he should avoid it until the last possible moment. So that's why the Torah taught us, if you could say the lamed at the beginning of the word, or delay it, always delay speaking if you can. Rav Huttner says a very tief of art. He bases it on a morale. He says, all the examples that the Gemara gave, where the Torah could have used the word, the letter Lamed, and instead used the word Hey, are referring to places. Eilima, Yerushalayima. We never have a situation where I'm going to meet a person that instead of putting the Lamed, we put a Hey. In other words, let's say, the Pasuk says, Reuven's going to meet Shimon. It goes, Reuven Halach L'Shimon. You'll never see that the Pasuk says, Reuven Halach Shemoina. Why? Why is there a difference between a place and a person? So he says, people, by definition, are individuals. There's no way that a person could totally enter, one person could enter another person. A person could totally immerse himself in a place. If I go to Yerushalayim, I'm totally Yerushalayim. So I could say, Yerushalayim. But if I go to meet my friend, if Reuven goes to meet Shemoina, they can meet, they could talk, but Reuven can't enter Shimon. That's why you can't say Shemoina, you only can say Reuven Halach L'Shimon. Ubei Shammai asked the Gemara, the Yehuda Merav Menolu, how does he know that a Shemeris Yavam cannot get married to anyone else? Melish saw Nafka. Asked the Gemara, Ubei Hillel, she's not allowed to marry anyone else. Ubei Hillel Nami asked the Gemara, typically Melish Zar. Says the Gemara, Enochanami. We learn it from Issar. So we're back to where we started. If we learn it from Issar, that a Shemeris Yavam is not allowed to marry anyone else, so what does he do with the word Chutzal? Chutzal Amali, L'Rabbis Arusa. That even if Shimon was only married to his wife, an Erison, they never had Nesuin, when Shimon dies, she has to have Yibam. V'idach, how will Beis Shammai know this then? He learns it Mechutza Chutzal. The Torah could have used the word Chutzal, and the Torah used the word ha-chutza, so I could learn two rules from it. One rule is that an arusa is required to have yibam u'chalitza, and the other halacha is to teach us that a tzaris erva is required to have yibam u'chalitza. Vidach and Beis Hillel, chutza ha-chutza lo mashmahu. He doesn't agree with this concept of chutza ha-chutza. And as the Ritva explains, it doesn't mean that Beis Hillel will never use we agree that we can learn such a limud. In this case, he doesn't say that the fact that Torah uses the extra hay is to point to another limud. Ask the Gemara. Rava matamai de Beis Shammai. Why does Beis Shammai hold that a tsaris erva is eligible for yibum? Because he says a simple reason. Dein hesachal alissa. If a woman is married to If a man is married to a woman, and this woman is already related to him, that means, our example, Shimon is married to Reuven's daughter. Shimon's married to Reuven's daughter, and therefore Shimon's daughter is a bas. Okay? Is a bas to Reuven. Now, we want also that she should be considered an eshesach when Shimon marries her. We have a concept of ein eshechal al iser. Once Reuven's daughter is an iser to him, because she's his daughter, she can no longer be considered an Eish Esach. Ein Esach Al Alisser. So since she never became an Eish Esach, so she never fell to Yibam. Because the only one that falls to Yibam is an Eish Esach. So her tzara is not the tzara of a woman who's Bechlal a candidate, and therefore there's no issue of tzara serva, according to Beis Shammai. As the Gemara, Tainach the Nosa Meis, Vakach Nosa Chayei, Loi Esa Isach Isha, V'chayel Eish Esach. Ella, I'm going to explain this in a minute. Ella Nosa Chay, Vakach Nosa Meis, Achos Isha Kodim, Kivan, Shats like this. The example we gave is that this woman was first a daughter, Reuven's daughter, was first his daughter, and then she became Shimon's wife. But we could have an opposite case. Let's say Shimon married a woman, so she became an Eish Esach. Then afterwards, Shimon married Reuven married this woman's sister. So first she was an Eish Esach, and then she became an Achos Isha. So here it is a case of a Tzara Serva. Right? Says the Gemara that that's also not considered a problem. Why is it not considered a problem, according to Beis Shammai? Because since she already has on herself one Isser, another Isser cannot happen. So she's only an Eish Esach. She's not becoming an Achos Isha. When is there a halacha of tzaras erva, if we're going to say there's such a halacha? When a woman is an erva. But here she's not an erva. Because given that she was first an Eish Esach, and then an Achos Isha, so she's only an Eish Esach. An Eish Esach is a candidate for Yibam. In fact, Tosfos asks the question, if what the Gemara is saying is true, then why isn't this woman a candidate for Yibam? Not only her tzara should be a candidate for Yibam, even she should be a candidate for Yibam. So Tosfos says an interesting teretz. The moment we're going to attempt to do Yibam with her, the Isser of Eish Esach will fall on her, which will prevent her from doing Yibam. But the bottom line is, since she's only an Eish Esach, so her Eish Esach is Chayiv in Yibam. So just to review quickly, according to Beis Shammai, if she was first an Achos Isha, or she was first a Bas, she never became an Eish Esach. So if she's not an Eish Esach, there is no din of Yibam, there is no din of Tzara. If on the other hand she was first an Eish Esach, so she's a regular Eish Esach, and Eish Esach is a candidate for Yibam, and maybe she personally can't have Yibam, but certainly doesn't exempt her co-wife.
Hang on one second.